We'll see how loud this is. I know I speak loud, so let's check this out. Too loud? Is this too loud? Crazy? Okay, no, okay, all right. Well, Paul mentioned that there wouldn't be prayer tonight because Becca was out of town. She is out of town. I'll tell you where she's at. Yesterday, we took her to the airport. Josh is leading a NATO Congress this week, and Sheila, our daughter-in-law, is graduating from the colonel's course in Greffenwurm, Germany. So they had no one to watch Connor. So they asked Becca to come over for 2 weeks and babysit for 2 weeks. And like a good grandpa, as I was taking her to the airport, I said, now, Becca, you're going to do great. Be responsible for this little guy for 2 weeks. Do me a favor. Don't let him out of your sight. She said, Dad, come on. How old do I have to be before you quit telling me what to do? Oh, my goodness. Well, Pastor Rex asked if I would share from Romans chapter 4 because he's been talking through, going through Genesis, and we've been discussing Abraham. And so Romans chapter 4 talks about Abraham in great detail. Paul gives a great defense. But before we start, I want to dismiss the kids to WOW. Thank you, Kari. Kids can go to WOW, yes. One of the things that Paul did before he started and finished the letter to the Romans, in we call it chapter 4, but in that section, he wrote in chapter 3 this amazing, what I would call a prelude. In verses 27, 8, and 9, it goes, "Then what becomes of our boasting? Is it excluded? By what kind of law? By a law of works? No, but by the law of faith. For we hold that one is justified by faith apart from works of the law. Or is God the God of Jews only? Is he not the God of Gentiles also? Yes, of Gentiles also. Since God is one, who will justify the circumcised by faith and the uncircumcised through faith?" Now that's the prelude. He gives that in the end of chapter 3 before he begins with a great defense of justification by faith in the next chapter. But let me ask you a question. If we were to sum up, in my opinion, if we summed up Romans chapter 4, for me it is the reading of the will. The reading of the will. I don't know how many of you have ever received notification. You've been included in someone's will. Someone you didn't even know. And yet you're invited to attend the reading to receive confirmation of an overwhelming and undeserved gift. That's pretty exciting, isn't it? When you get that letter in the mail. Who is this person? I don't know, but I'm supposed to be there at the reading of the will. That's pretty exciting. We're only made aware and given legal confirmation in the final reading when we get together with the people and the attorney or the trustee reads it off and explains it. What's amazing is that the benefactor, the person who's giving it, had planned it out for us to receive it a long time ago. While we had no knowledge of it, the gift was planned while we were totally unaware. When we receive something that we feel we've earned or it's ours rightfully, there's little enthusiasm or gratefulness. Whereas when we're informed of a gift we had no idea about or that we never imagined we could ever receive, we're stunned, moved, overjoyed every time we think about it. Now, the truth is that because of the business I've been in for the last 14 years since we've been home from the mission field, I've had the privilege to sit in on lots of these. Not because I was given anything. No, that's never happened. But because I was the one giving it away. Life insurance companies writing checks to family members for millions of dollars. And I got to be there to tell them how much it was, to tell them why the gift was going to them and how it was held and how it would be distributed and would they sign these papers and we'll have the check to them in so many days. That is really fun to do. But you know, it's so interesting. When you get a group of people together like that and that's taking place, the ones that feel it's all theirs, they're never happy. I'll never forget this last one. It was about a year ago. And the kids came in from California and Vegas, and these kids came in from all over. They're all grown now. They're in their 60s. And there was one child that I don't think it was a blood child. It was one that they sort of raised as a family. And when the father who had passed away left these millions and millions and millions of dollars, and he also included this one person that wasn't a blood child, the other kids went crazy. They did not want me to give that person the check. He doesn't deserve it. When we think we've earned something, it's no thrill in receiving it. When we absolutely know we did not deserve it, why would they choose me to give this to? That person usually sits in the corner of the room and weeps out of joy. That is Romans chapter 4. That is exactly Romans chapter 4. Let's look at it. Paul starts with this question. What then shall we say was gained by Abraham, our forefather, according to the flesh? For if Abraham was justified by works, he has nothing, he has something to boast about, but not before God. For what does the scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. Now to the one who works, his wages are not counted as a gift, but as his due. And to the one who does not work but believes in him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is counted as righteousness. Paul lays out this argument. He's laying out this argument to people in Rome. Now, there are Jews in Rome and there are Gentiles in Rome, and he's writing out. But see, he starts the first story about Abraham, because Abraham was considered the father of Israel. The father of Israel. It's interesting that Abraham is actually the father of the three Abrahamic religions. Islam through Ishmael. Judaism through Isaac and Jacob. And Christianity through Christ. Wow. He's the father of those three Abrahamic religions. And so Paul is trying to explain, we have the father of Israel. And he says, to the one who works, his wages are not counted as a gift, but is due. But the one who believes, who justified the ungodly, his faith is counted as righteousness. It's so fun because when I've sat in a room, when we've had the reading of the will, and I remember this one member of this family, this last one I'm telling you about that was recent. Very successful, well known. You would know who it was if I told you his name. One of the children worked in the company. One of the girls. She worked for the company all her life. She thought it was all hers. Why would this other daughter get something, because she lived in California and wanted nothing to do with the business? And why on earth would this person who wasn't even a legal blood heir get a penny? When you think you work for something, you think it's yours. But the reality was, and I had to explain to them, you know, really, these checks laying here, none of them are yours. Your dad did all this. None of this is yours. We could just burn these. These were never yours. This is a gift. 100% a gift. Now, Paul goes on to explain, not only was the father of Israel, what was his requirement to receive this gift? You know, when we think of the requirement to receive a gift, Paul's explaining the father of Israel did nothing. He did nothing. Then he goes to the king of Israel. He talks about David in verse 6. Just as David also speaks of the blessing of the one to whom God counts righteous apart from works, blessed are those whose lawless deeds are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man against whom the Lord will not count his sin. Now, even though Paul is trying to be very clear, there were, there are, and there will always be people in every church, people in every religion around the world who believe that it's what they do that puts them in some type of good, acceptable standing before God. It's almost like it's a prison in their mind. The jailer tells them that what they do elevates them to some religious higher light, a little holier than the next person, based on some invented mental game. Well, let's find out if that's what it is. Paul is so concerned that people wanted to compare themselves by one being holier than the next. It's interesting that Islam is based on what you do to have a right standing with God. Judaism, it's based on keeping the law to have a right standing with God. Christianity is based on grace. It's not what you do. And yet, in every church, in every faith around the globe, people still think it's what they do. So Paul is going to explain it. First of all, he's going to say, is it circumcision? Is that what it is? Is that what sets us apart? Because what is it that set apart the Jews from the Gentiles? Circumcision. So let's read in verse 9. Is this blessing then only for the circumcised or also for the uncircumcised? For we say that faith was counted to Abraham as righteousness. How then? I'm really loud, Tim. I feel like I'm really loud. You can turn me down a little bit. How then was it counted to him? Was it before or after he had been circumcised? It was not after, but before he was circumcised. He received the sign of the circumcision as a seal of the righteousness that he had by faith while he was still uncircumcised. The purpose was to make him the father of all who believe without being circumcised, so that the righteousness would be counted to them as well, and to make him the father of the circumcised who are not merely circumcised, but who also walk in the footsteps of faith that our father Abraham had before he was circumcised. What Paul is trying to say is, now look, understand people, we think that Abraham is the father of faith and received this blessing because he was circumcised. But if you look, that's not true. That's completely false. And he's trying to explain it. Think about this for a second. We think the Jews, because of circumcision, and Paul goes on in so many places in Scripture, young males who are circumcised at 8 days of age, it makes them a Jew. That's not what makes them a Jew. That's not it. That's not what gives them faith. In Genesis chapter 12, go back with me. Pastor Rex has worked through some of these verses. But think about for a second in Genesis chapter 12. The Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless those who bless you, and in all your families of the earth shall be blessed. How old was Abraham when that happened? Do you remember how old Abraham was when that happened in Genesis chapter 12? When God called him and blessed him, he chose him and he blessed him. How old was Abraham? 75 years old. when Abraham was first blessed. He was 75. Then we get into Genesis chapter 15. And he believed in the Lord, and he counted to him as righteousness. Now, in Genesis chapter 15, Abraham was 85. Then in Genesis chapter 16, you remember this, Hagar bore Abram a son. Abram called his name Ishmael. Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abraham, Genesis 16, 15. So Abraham was now 86. Then in chapter 17, God said to Abraham, you shall keep my covenant, you and your offspring, for generations. This is my covenant. Every male among you shall be circumcised, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you. He who is 8 days old among you shall be circumcised, every male throughout your generation. And God said to Abraham, chapter 17, as for Sarah, your wife, you shall not call her Sarai, but you shall call her Sarah. I will bless her. Moreover, I will give you a son by her. I will bless her. She will become nations. Kings of people shall come from her. Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said, shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Shall Sarah, who is 90, bear a child? When he finished talking with him, God went up from Abraham. Then Abraham took Ishmael, his son, and all those born in his house, or bought with his money, every male among the men of Abraham's house, and he circumcised them that very day. Abraham was 99 when he was circumcised, and Ishmael was 13. Abraham was 99. Ishmael was 13. When did Abraham receive the blessing of God? When he was 75. What did circumcision have to do with the blessing to Abraham? Nothing. Abraham was not even a Jew. Abraham was a Gentile. Who was the first Jew? Who was the first Jew? Isaac was the first Jew. Because Abraham was circumcised, then he was born. So the first Jew was Isaac. It wasn't even Abraham. Abraham was a Gentile. And that the father of faith. What Paul is trying to get through is that it could not be an act that we perform to obtain righteousness, because Abraham was given God's blessing at 75, counted righteous at 85, and you're not circumcised until he was 99, 25 years, a holy man, counted as righteous, blessed by God, but no outward sign. Well, what are some of those acts that we think are outward signs? What are some of those acts? Think about this for a little bit. For a long time in the church, we thought that infant baptism was the sign that brought salvation. So let's stop and think about that for just a second. When is God's grace given to that child? When is God's grace? When is God's common grace poured out on that child? Probably before it's even born. Before it's even born. We think that a christening service is going to change the child's life. No act changes God's work towards that person. That's heresy to say that it does. It is common grace. God, it's poured out on his people. We think that when some of us say, oh, it's when we're baptized as an adult. Some of the churches, there are churches around the globe that when you're baptized as an adult, you're saved. Well, I have a question for that too. My question is, when did the person believe? Before they went down into the water? Or sometime previously? Well, they wouldn't have gone into the water unless they believed ahead of time. It's all grace. There is no work, no act that we can do that will justify us. There is none. Or maybe some people think it's because I don't do this, or I do that. I do this. I commit my time to this, and I sacrifice for this, and I do those things. Ah, you're acting like a Jew. Abrahamic type I'm talking about. You understand what I'm saying? You think you deserve it. No. No. That's exactly what Paul is trying to say. There is nothing we can do. Oh, but if we keep the law. Oh, but it's if we keep the law, we can be saved. We're gonna try to keep the law. Well, let's think about that just for a second. Abraham received the blessing when he was 75 years old, still traveling, coming up out of current Iraq and coming up and traveling the Via Maris, the way of the sea, as he came down through Canaan. And when he was young, 75 to 80, before he had kids yet. Now think for just a little bit. So it was following the law that made him holy. Well, let's think about that. Abraham grew old and he died in Canaan near Bethel. His son, Isaac, grew old and died in that same region. Jacob had 12 sons. And one of them was sold into Egypt, Joseph. The family ran out of food. They had to go down to Egypt. How long were they there? 430 years. Then Moses led them out. And on the way from Sinai, he received the law in two tablets. So if you calculate for just a little bit, Abraham was holy. Three generations later, his family went to Egypt. On the way out, 430 years later, they received the law. Over 500 years. Abraham was counted righteous. 500 years before Moses received the law. Who's kidding who? What can you do to be found righteous on your own? Nothing. There's nothing you can do. Why do we think that? What makes us think that if I do this, this, and this, or if I don't do this, this, and this, I can be counted righteous? You are only locked in a prison in your mind, thinking that by doing this, I'm holier than the next person. That is exactly what Paul is saying is craziness. It's Christ alone, God's grace alone. So, is it grace or was it love? The blessing of Israel, born a Jew, always a Jew. You know, it's so funny. People say they're going to, I've known people that were disgruntled Christians, let's say, disgruntled Gentiles. And they are going to convert to Judaism. Well, unless you can trace your lineage back to Jacob, good luck. Because that's what it is. There's the faith, a faith in believing that Christ hasn't come yet. But that's silliness. Being born a Jew is always a Jew. This is what's beautiful. This is why Paul talks about one of the beauties of Judaism. If you are born a Jew and you can trace your lineage back to Jacob, you can trace your lineage back several thousand years through your bloodlines, through your clan, your tribe, you're a Jew. And the thing about Jews are, once recognized by your family, I don't care what you do, guess what? You're always a Jew. It's not going to change. My family goes back to Norway for the late, most recent 400 years. I don't know before that who, where they came from, what happened to them. I have no clue. But that's what I am. In the church, when people come and seek Christ in a church, and they place their faith as a searcher for Christ, do we say, you are part of this family, you are part of this clan, you are part of this tribe, and there's no way out? You're here forever. You're part of this body forever. You see, that's one of the great things the Jews do. If you ever wander around in Jerusalem and the communities that live there, and they're so tight, and generations after generations after generations, and they know who they are. But in the church, you disappear for a few weeks, they forget your name. Church is bad. We need to realize how important people are for generations, even if we don't see them for months or years. Do we say, oh, we've got rules. We have rules. You haven't been here for a couple weeks. You're no longer part of this. Why aren't we knocking on those doors and bringing those people back and reaching them and making them realize who they are, that they're a part of a body? What kind of a job is the church doing as far as increasing its tribe? When a person comes into your family, they must be given absolute assurance that nothing, absolutely nothing, will ever deny or deprive them of your faithful love for them. But do we do that to the church? Are we doing that in the church when they come into the body? I know when our son Josh, our oldest, when he was married, and I told Sheila, our daughter-in-law, Sheila, you're part of our tribe now. You're part of our tribe. And I said, no matter what you do or what happens, you're always going to be my daughter-in-law. No matter what happens, no matter what you guys do, how you fight, what life brings, you are now a part of our family from this day forward, no matter what. Why doesn't the church do that? That's where we should be learning it, is in the church. If we as humanity can capture even a glimpse of the unmatchable love of the Father has for us, for you individually, corporately as a church, you'll be freed from this prison of... Those of you that have been with me on the board for the last 10 years, you know there's one thing that I cannot stand. It's legalism. I cannot stand it. And I'm convinced that is what locks people in a prison in their mind is legalism. And it keeps you jailed by some silly false concept of what is righteousness. If we can capture that there is no act of the flesh, there is no following of any law that can place us into a position of grace before our holy God, you will learn to stroll. I think of that as I walk in our flowers that my wife plants, as we stroll unhindered in the realm of God's overwhelming love and grace that fills us with unspeakable joy every time we think of it. Just like the gift you had no idea you'd ever be offered, ever imagined you would ever receive. Oh, that the church today would be stunned, overjoyed every time we think about what God had planned out for us a long time ago, before we ever knew it, before we ever were a part of it, before we ever had any effort in it. He planned it. Just like the reading of the will, that's what the Father's done for you. Every one of you and me. That is exciting. Hey, let's sing again.